It's time for Twink This Week in Google. We're in some strange surroundings. Jason Howell is sitting to my right. I've got Jeff Jarvis to my left, and floating in the air where she belongs, the angel Stacey Higginbotham. We've gathered together to talk about Google I/O's keynote for 2017. Lots of announcements. We're going to go through one by one next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 405, recorded Wednesday, May 17th, 2017, Google I/O. This Week in Google is brought to you by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit Upside.com and enter the code TWIG to be guaranteed to receive at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. It's time for Twig This Week in Google in a little bit of an unusual circumstance, because today was Google I/O, their developers conference, and we were down at Shoreline Amphitheater for Google I/O in Mountain View, California. Joining me in a beautiful studio provided by Google. Thank you, Google, and our good friend Chris DeBono. We'll talk to Chris in just a second. From Google's open source software initiative. First, let me introduce our panel. Of course, Jeff Jarvis is here, unusually next to me, which means I can do, and he can do. and that's great. I'm not sure we have figured out the technology to do that with the TV avatars that we use in the studio at home, but I'm glad we could do that here. Google is amazing, really. They're just amazing.
They are. They are indeed.
Also here, Jay from our All About Android show and Tech News Today, Jason Howell. Good to see you. I am doing great. Three of us sat together in the box seats, the press box seats, to watch the event. But Stacey Higginbotham probably had the best seat. She was back in our studios watching the stream with Nathan Oliveros-Giles. Hello, Stacey.
Hello. Yes, I have the same seat I have every week.
It's a good seat. It's a comfortable
seat.
I
like it.
What did the dog think?
The dog was under the bed. She didn't have any opinions. Oh, okay. She's not in the room today.
Usually I am where you were, which is watching the stream of a keynote and then commenting on it. And thank you for doing that this morning. I appreciate it. But I thought for once, maybe the last time, I thought I'd come to one of these events in person. Actually, it was kind of fun. Shoreline Amphitheater, as you may or may not know, is a concert venue. It's the same place Google did this last year, and it's open air, and we were sitting right at underneath the edge between the sky and the sheltered space, just waiting for the sun to come over and start broiling us. I guess last year it didn't arrive. We froze. Last year you broiled. There were cases of sunburn out there.
They gave us Google a sun lotion.
Oh, that's nice. So let's. I guess I'm going to follow Ron Amadio's live blog at Ars Technica as he went through the event, so that way we can kind of chronologically cover and make sure we don't miss anything that Google announced. But before we do, I'm curious, Stacey, what you and Nate thought of it from your vantage point. Was this an exciting, gripping keynote?
So I was going to ask you guys if it was different for y'all. So on our end, watching it, we were not super pumped. None of the things made us go wow to the extent. And we noticed that the two themes that emerged was context, which is really exciting, but it's really hard to show. So context was big, building on AI and giving AI context about where we are to give us better suggestions, which is awesome. And then two, none of it's going to be out now. Like nothing that was super exciting seems to be available. And of course, I was thrilled about the TPU stuff, but that's just me.
Yeah, we'll get to the TPU real soon because that was very interesting, I thought. In fact, that was part of Sundar Pichai's context, as you say, talking about how it was a mobile-first world until recently, and now it's an AI-first world. This is not something new. Google said this last year at Google I/O as well, I think.
No, I mean, I think the whole thing was incremental. They took the base they had last year, and they added considerably to it. The problem is, as Stacey said, it's quite right. The things that are impressive are not things that you hold in your hand as a consumer and say, well, that's a great new gadget. The AI work is phenomenal. I think that the photo recognition stuff, Google Lens, is going to be really important, because what it says is that Google will know the context, as Stacey said, of where you are and add value to that. That's a big deal. So there's a lot of big deal technical stuff underneath. The Tensor new stuff is great. But in terms of if I were trying to write a consumer story about there's a lot of German journalists who are here. One guy has to write like 15 stories. I don't envy him trying to figure out what stories to write for a consumer audience out of this.
Right. How about you, Jason?
Well, I think obviously there's a big kind of dedication to, like you say, moving from mobile first to AI first, which we've seen in the past year and a half, especially everyone is buckling down on AI. And I think the challenge that Google had kind of going into I/O with an event that is so heavily focused on AI is that we almost have been inundated with AI as it is already, as the answer to everyone's prayers for all of these different things. So when Google comes out and says, look what else we're doing with AI, it's a what else instead of you've never seen this before. You know what I mean? There were few announcements this time that you could easily point at and say, oh my God, mind blown. That's amazing that you can even do that right now. There's some really impressive things, but we've already kind of bought into the idea that AI is this grand savior and is able to take computing to a next level. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, I could have assumed that they'd probably go there next.
There were a lot of things missing. I mean, we wanted to see a Google Chromebook Pixel, maybe.
At least some
mention of Chromebooks or Chrome OS. No mention at all.
No new Pixel C,
C? No new tablet.
I was going to say, Nathan was upset that there was no VR stuff. But going back to this AI concept.
Well, wait a minute. Before you say that, there is a VR keynote tomorrow. So, okay. And there was VR stuff at the end. I don't know. Maybe you didn't get to the end.
I was there the whole time. I promise. Even paying attention. He was sad that they didn't have a dedicated AR device that they could show on stage. That they introduced this. What they did is they introduced a reference design and said HTC and Lenovo were going to build a dedicated AR. I'm sorry,
but this
VR.
Is a big deal. This is a standalone VR. To date, no one makes this. Even HTC with the Vive is tethered to a PC.
That's Oculus without all the crap.
And imagine. I mean, I don't know the price. You're right. We don't know anything.
It's
about
not
it.
It's not here yet.
Yeah, and we don't
know
the price.
I just
want to
put that in there.
But I don't think Google announces something like that unless they believe it can be made and made in a – I mean, it would be embarrassing if it weren't made this year, for instance. So I think it shows – Google says we now have – this is somewhat similar in my mind to what they did with the camera. They had this great technology, this image processing technology they developed using TensorFlow and AI, and then they had the Pixel phone. And they said, well, we have limitations in the hardware that's in the phone, but what if we applied some of this great software and AI to what we're doing, the process we're doing, something, frankly, that Apple's been doing and had scooped everybody with for years. And suddenly the Google Pixel is the best camera phone on the market. And I think what they're saying, as I interpret it, admittedly, they said nothing, is we figured out a way to take consumer hardware, something that's going to be relatively affordable. It's going to have, has to have some battery life, right? It has to have decent screens. It has to, you talked about latency. Head latency is a huge problem in VR. It's what makes people nauseous. And they've figured out a way to use some form of motion sensitivity in this device to reduce latency. They've done some stuff. And I suspect a lot of it is done with existing hardware and as with the camera, applying some great software smarts based on AI to it. So I'm reading well between the lines, I understand, but I think that there might be something of great interest there. And to be fair, we won't find out till tomorrow. That's when is it tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow's the VR kind of keynote. Yeah, I'm very curious to see of the standalone, like the question that I've had about the idea, because this was a rumor that Wall Street Journal had, I think, early last year, and we've kind of been waiting for the standalone VR headset to happen, is, okay, if Google's doing a standalone VR headset, is this mobile VR, but without the need to put your phone in? Or is it HTC Vive / Oculus Rift level VR, you know, kind of like the premium level of VR? Or is this somewhere in between? And it kind of explaining why that's necessary if it veers more for the mobile side, which is what I worry it might do.
Well, what if you could do Daydream without buying. It's got to be less than an Android phone, right? Because Daydream could be done right now with a $700 or $800 Android phone. So let's say it's a $500 or $400 price point, but it's as good as Daydream VR today. Would that
so
be good enough?
Is that going to be worth it?
I'd be very mad about that.
Mad about that.
I'd be very meh about that. If their whole idea is here's a dedicated device that allows you to do VR in the same way that you already can with a device that you have and a very inexpensive viewer, but you don't need your phone anymore, that really does very little. That's little extra value.
Wait. You're not thinking about the market. The classroom, for instance. If you wanted to do Daydream VR for 30 kids in a classroom, you'd have to buy 30 high-end smartphones.
Okay, all right. So there is a market there, but I think what we're really dancing around is how big is the VR market? I think it's a lot smaller than anybody wishes it were. And who was it was telling us? Levy was telling us that Sundar put up somebody put up another post separately today saying, be patient with VR. It's not there yet. We know. But
I think the VR guy.
Is we're leaving lunch.
Is Clay before?
Was it Clay?
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I put a post. So
Clay Baver, Bavor, yeah.
So the problem is a $500 device. Let's say it's $500. Are we going to buy that at Christmas?
That's wild speculation. I don't think it's designed for that market.
I don't know that there's a consumer market for VR as a device yet. The advantage is you add $100 onto your phone. Okay, it's a hassle. Yes, it doesn't come with the full capability. But to buy a separate dedicated device for VR at pick a price point.
Well, pick a price risky. Is good for schools because I think that this is where Google. I mean,
schools are poor. Google has done a real add-on for them. A Chromebook they can afford because it does curricular material and makes them more efficient. To buy an extra device to show VR in a school, you got to be a private school to afford that.
We're talking a little bit in a vacuum. We'll find out more tomorrow and maybe more later on. And there's really nothing to say until they ship a product. And then, but you're right. I'm skeptical about the VR market.
See.
And I think it's not surprising that Clay would post something that says, hey, you know, everybody expects so much VR. They're asking for.
And I think the AR stuff. I mean, Facebook has gone sotto voce on VR and loud on AR. And in a way, I think what we saw today from Google with the photo stuff, with the here is your environment, here is that restaurant. I will understand the image of that restaurant, and I will give you data based on that.
Oh boy, that was
that's an AR world. So the answers are going to come in AR first, I think. Sure, and they're going to come through your camera on your phone.
My plan to do this in chronological order was
just
completely blown away. We've actually jumped to the end of the keynote somehow.
Bad news. It's like we started at the end of the book.
But that wasn't the payoff. There was a lot of stuff. Sundar Pichai took the stage at the beginning, 2 minutes past the hour, which was pretty timely for any keynote, and gave out some numbers that were pretty amazing for any company. 1 billion active users a month, 1 billion monthly active users for Gmail, for Android, for Chrome, for Google Play, and for Maps. How is that? That's a pretty good coincidence that all be exactly 1 billion.
Give or take.
Yeah.
This is an AI world where you do with round numbers. Approximations.
Here's another round number. 500 million active. I'm sorry, I just lowered my seat. 500 million active users on Google Photos.
With 1.2 billion, you're taking all the numbers. We have no numbers later. 1.2 billion photos a day.
That's amazing.
That is.
2 billion active Android devices.
Jason and I turned to each other in this moment. Imagine if they started Google Plus now.
Google Plus? What's that? Nobody mentioned Google Plus.
No. But imagine if you had this functionality where the photos and everything, would be an entirely different effort.
Right. It might be. Yeah, it might be. 2 billion Android devices, active Android devices is, you know, I mean, that dwarfs anything
else. That's insanity.
There's nothing even close. That's dwarfs.
The sheer numbers of that, it's hard to even understand. But
and a little later on, we'll talk about it, but they announced something called Android Go, which is a low-cost version of Android designed for phones with less than a gigabyte of memory. Lower processor speeds, lower cost, obviously, is key to that. And that's the key to getting, as they said, to the next billion. 3 billion active users by next year? We'll see. Let's see. What else? Search, Maps, and other services all use machine learning. And actually, we've seen machine learning already in Google's Assistant, which has some smart reply features. Pichai announced that Smart Reply is going to roll out to all Gmail users today.
I got a question for you there. So Smart Reply, I like. and I use it, but every time I use it, I feel guilty. I feel like I'm saying, you're not good enough to respond to myself. So, I'm going to let Google respond for me.
I just had a few exclamation marks, maybe some happy faces.
Well, the problem is,
you're still here. I thought you left.
No, it's very hard to like jump in on such a you guys.
Harder than usual, Stacey, right?
It's harder than usual.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, Stacey.
No, it's okay. So smart reply. So etiquette master here, Jeff, I think you're fine because smart reply really only works well when you're trying to convey super basic information. Like if someone tells you their kid is dying, you're not going to get a great smart reply, right? Then that's when you craft the heartfelt message. So I wouldn't feel guilty for just replying to something like, I'll be there later, or let's set a date. I think it's better than what probably happens now, which is you like put it away and you never answer the email.
So there were two Googlers in the room who laughed at that line. Is this something that struck true to you?
No, I have to say though, even the smart reply they showed on the screen wasn't that smart because the question was, hey, let's go to a show. You want to go Saturday or Sunday? And the three smart replies were either one is okay, Saturday or whatever. No mention of Sunday. At all.
What? Well, Sunday. Because
it knows you're busy Sunday. Knows.
Yes, context.
No, I don't think.
But then either would not be available.
Yeah.
But that's cute.
Yeah. No, I
one
think
day.
That.
One day.
So here's the other thing, Stacey. So yes. The other problem is that the replies add more bangers, as we say in the news business. More exclamation points than I would ever use. Now, is that because Google thinks that I use a lot of exclamation points, or does it do it for everybody?
I don't think it's customized. It's not customized to you yet. But
it's not customized to me. So the whole world is going crazy with exclamation points.
Everyone loves exclamation points.
I use them all the
time.
They're
awesome.
What's wrong with you, Jeff? Oh, he's a professor.
He probably uses the Oxford comma.
Yeah, I do use the Oxford comma, and so should you.
Two spaces or one F. No, I don't want to even get into it. No.
Nope.
So I would love Smart Reply to
Oxford comma.
Could Smart Reply add emoji replies?
I find that the emoji replies, so the keyboard auto connects or auto doesn't correct, but it suggests emojis, but it always does it way too late for me. I've already typed the word and then it's like, oh, would you like an emoji? And that totally defeats the purpose of an emoji, in my opinion.
Of not having to type the word.
Yeah.
To be pre-literate. The emoji is pre-literate, not post-literate.
Exactly.
Image recognition.
Wait, I'm sorry. I've got to say this. Wait till Trump discovers emojis.
He's never used an emoji.
He's never used emoji.
Can somebody research that?
Can you imagine Wolf Blitzer having to speak what the president said today if he spoke in emojis?
Has Donald Trump ever used an emoji in a tweet? It won't know that. How could it possibly know that?
She's thinking.
I've never seen her think this long. You think she's actually going through the tweets?
I don't think she's thinking. I think she's done.
That's a stupid query.
I think she did what a lot of people do when you bring up that topic. She just
no, I don't want to talk about
decided
that.
Decided I'm not going to talk about it.
Let's talk about image recognition. This was a very interesting slide. Vision error rate for image recognition has now improved so that it is better than human beings for image recognition.
What does that mean, by the way?
I don't know, but it sounds good.
People, I don't know what that is.
Oh, I do. I'm Google. What does it mean?
This is speech recognition, not image recognition.
No, it's image recognition.
No, image also. Image
okay,
is now,
I was like, the chart you're showing says speech, and I remember them talking about speech, but I did not remember image.
I'm not showing it. That's the problem. And so Karsten's looking very quickly for the image. It's a graph showing how algorithms have gone from 30% error rate to less than zero error rate. I don't know how you can
do that.
So it's approaching zero error rate. There is a kind of a standard human error rate. I guess humans, what could you look at and you would go, I don't know what that is. And
think about any optical illusion
maybe
that you look at,
like
or think about how bad we, and I don't know if this messes with this, but think about how unreliable witnesses are. Or, I mean, how many times have you?
Maybe it's just face recognition. Yeah, it might be better that. Okay, we have found this. Google has come up with the, I don't know if you can see this at home, but these are the emojis that Donald Trump. No, stop that. Jeff, you're trolling me and you're even here. So the reason he mentioned this image recognition improvement is to announce a new project called Google Lens, which I think is very exciting and very interesting. It's initially going to come with Google Assistant, which, by the way, is now going to be in the iPhone, as well as, you know, more places than ever before.
It's funny, also, you can hear the cheers in the room were from like the frontmost, biggest Google executives. They're all the iPhone users, yes. Yeah.
So I love this. Yes.
I have been wanting this forever since we had smartphones that were smart enough, because I like constantly do things like walk through my yard and I'm like, ooh, is this a weed or is it a plant? Can I eat this? Can I eat this?
That's something that a human would be not as good at, right? If you showed that weed to me, I'd say, yeah, eat it. Let's see what happens. But Google would know. Google Lens would know if you could eat it.
Exactly.
And it would say, don't eat that. Don't listen to Leo. He's trying to kill you. I like the image he showed. He showed a flower. I do this all the time too, Stacey. He showed a flower. I say this all the time. I'm looking out. We're taking a walk. I'm looking out the window. What is that? And he showed a flower, and it actually figured out what the flower was. And then Assistant offered you more things you could do with that, including buy it, which I thought was really interesting. That's going to be very, very valuable. Is this the same as Google Goggles?
I was just going to say, you remember the old product. Yeah. I'm looking at an article from 2011. Google Goggles gets faster, smarter, solves Sudoku. It can scan barcodes. It can also take a picture of a bridal dress and be able to go to...
Everything gets advanced a bit at a time. Yeah,
exactly. Google Goggles was an app that you could install and use and do a lot of this, at least some of this stuff. Albeit now, I mean, with the power of, you know, the technology nowadays and AI working on the back end, it's like this on steroids.
Same.
I think they had to program the data from Google Goggles. What is different here, this is what I vaguely remember from Google Goggles. It had to be already entered in some sort of image database. So like it had to be a famous monument and things like that. What's cool here is... the image recognition is doing the work. This isn't like a predetermined database. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly the difference. I think you nailed it. He pointed a camera, barcoded Wi-Fi credentials, and it said connected. It logged you in automatically. That was awesome, right?
That got a lot of oohs and ahs in the
That was the biggest cheers, I think, of the day. Yeah.
Well, everybody in the audience has crawled under furniture and looked under the bottom of routers and try to figure out what the logins are. That would really be fantastic. So all of this is being improved over time with the kind of massive training that Google does with, for instance, AlphaGo. They mentioned in the Go, winning the Go matches, beating the Go master, using tensor processing. And I love it, Stacey. You got excited about the tensor processing units.
As only you can.
No, this was exciting. So one of the big challenges in building specialized chips for machine learning is that they've used GPUs historically because they need a lot of fast I/O and they need to do a lot of things in parallel. And so that's why you've got these dedicated chips. What's been a challenge is you've only been able to run jobs on relatively small clusters of GPUs because you can't distribute your job over, like, when I was last reporting deeply on this, it was like 8. So you couldn't go beyond 8 different GPUs. What Google's done is done 64, which is 8x the power. Is it 8x? Is it exponential that way? Anyway, so that's actually a really big deal because that just means you can do your job. I mean, it's like Moore's Law for machine learning in a way.
They showed little especially engineered units that had were quad core units, right? And each one, I can't remember, was it 180 teraflops? And then they showed larger TPU units that combined many of those.
11.5 petaflops.
That was the total rack.
The 64.
So if you could show the rack, Karsten, that has the slide that has 4 of these in a rack, each of the units in this rack did, what was it, 100? How many petaflops?
It was 11.5 petaflops.
So what you were looking at is 4 racks, each could do 11.5 petaflops. You're talking, 46 or 40. That's kind of an unimaginable amount of processing power. But that's also on the cloud. So if you can, you know, if you're using the Google Compute Engine and using TensorFlow, suddenly you have devices designed for both parts of machine learning, the training, which is massively compute intensive. You're showing it a lot of images over and over and over again. And then the actual learning that there it is. That's the slide.
The inference, and, the execution.
And the meta part of inference. That was that the learning systems test the learning systems, and there's the meta learning that goes on.
Oh, yes. Right? The neural networks train the neural networks. Yeah.
And, yes, and when he was doing that, I was dying.
So if you're a machine learning, you know, student or a guru, they had us in the audience, a 17-year-old. Who had built a process to do this? It's just an amazing story. This is now online for you to use for free. It's open source. He said that TensorFlow is the number one machine learning program on GitHub. Thank you, Chris DeBona. I'm sure you helped. Oh, the other that helped put that online. That's really remarkable to offer that kind of thing. And of course, Google benefits by it, but. We all benefit by it.
Can I ask one of my amateurish questions?
Yeah.
So the processing power you get from this is just for learning systems. It's that kind of. It's a different kind of logic, a different kind of programming. The speed and everything else is a kind of a parallel universe of computing versus straight computational work.
It could do Van Neumann stuff, but it's optimized for this kind of massively parallel technology. It's designed for training. 180. You know what? We should bring Chris DeBono over here. This would be a good time to get somebody who knows what he's talking about on the show.
You happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here.
All right. Don't go too far, Jeff.
Now I get confused by the headphones and the rest.
It's great to see you. Don't be confused because the sound is going to be weird, but great to see you. Chris DeBono is an old friend. I mean, you started Floss Weekly probably 12 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. At the time, you were not at Google. You were doing some game thing.
That was a long time ago. Yeah, no, so that was about 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
We did Floss Weekly, and then...
It can't be that long. Google's only 12 years old. I mean, Google. Twit is only 12 years old, so... But you've been at Google how long now?
12 and a half years.
Well, so it was before you went... Yeah, you're right. It's before you went to Google. We did a few Floss Weeklies live in studios here. And I thank you for that. And I thank you for arranging this year and last year as well a place for us to do the show.
Well, I mean, and I don't want to take too much credit. I mean, Richard did a lot of the work, you know, last year and this year.
Thank you, Richard.
And the people run the studios here.
You know? So tell us, you are in charge of open source at Google. What's that mean?
So I look after all the incoming and outgoing open source code. I look after the health of the open source community in general so that we can continue to draw from it and release to it. And I also look after a small science education group called Making in Science. We'll be at Maker Faire on Friday.
Oh, good. Saturday. So we'll look for you. Great.
Yes, we have a booth there. And then I also do some funny sort of government relations and stuff. I do some unusual things.
The process of taking TensorFlow, which was an internal project, and making it open source and putting it on GitHub, tell me what that involves.
Well, So Will, who's my compatriot and runs my compliance and outreach team, and I, we try to have a really greased machine to help people release software from Google. But TensorFlow is really special. So there's a couple of engineers here, one by the name of Jeff Dean and another Rajat, who really, really wanted the world of machine learning and convolutional neural networks to develop the way we've been doing it, right? And so there was sort of a, not a danger, but there was a likelihood where they wouldn't develop neural networks the way that we are doing it here at Google. And so we're like, those other methods are okay, but we think this is a better way. And so Jeff very wisely said, we should open source this technology, we should get people developing the way that we're developing so that we can all move forward in this technical direction.
Set a standard.
Well, to set a standard and also to have like a nice frictionless place where we can all work together on this technology, right? Because, I mean, TensorFlow has been incredibly popular. We've taken probably thousands. Will can confirm how many patches we've taken from outside Google into TensorFlow, at least hundreds. I think thousands, though. And it's become a really great way to move the technology forward. And remember, it's under an Apache license, correct? Why don't you double check that? Yeah.
So you don't. That's interesting. So you'll use GPL, you use MIT, you use different licenses depending on.
Yeah. So for instance, when we release a JavaScript tool, we'll use BSD or MIT because that's what JavaScript people like. You know, and if you're releasing something for, Linux, it's going to be GPL'd for the kernel. If it's going to be so we try to help the software find its developer community, and so we're not too dogmatic about licenses.
What's nice is now you've taken TensorFlow, which is an open source project, and now you're giving people the hardware, some very sophisticated hardware, these new TPUs to work with, and it I presume works in conjunction with their TensorFlow projects.
Yeah. So if you're using TensorFlow and you push that load to a cloud TPU like that, you're getting an incredibly efficient way of doing your inference and training. So this is the same chip that we used for the AlphaGo win with Lee Sodell. And, a rack of those TPUs replaced, I'm not kidding, 100,000 machines.
So it was
an incredible savings of power. It was an incredible increase in efficiency and speed of the inference and training models. And it's fantastic. So,
wow. Well, so it's...
Can I just ask you? So when you're talking about the way you wanted people to do machine learning, are you talking about like as opposed to using something like CNTK or CAFE, or
partially yes? And also, if you look at CAFE and Torch and Tiano's licensing, mm-hmm. We're using the Apache license, which provides so any patents that we have that reads on TensorFlow that we've released, we're basically giving you a license to that. We're saying we're not going to rent seek, we're not going to come after you, and the other machine learning tools do not have that assurance. So that was another thing that we were really sort of worried about, that machine learning would end up getting locked up in sort of this world of, pay me. It's open source, but you still have to pay me. And we didn't want that to happen.
Are we going to see a vertical integration from the processor to your framework language and then on to like cloud? Like what is the optimal way you think this could or would develop?
So I think that make sense? The way it's going to happen is that, so right now you can download TensorFlow and point it at a zillion GPUs or whatever you might have at home.
And you do pay for the Google Compute Cloud. I mean, it's not free.
Yeah, I think we have like a free tier, that we do so that you can try things out.
Like for students.
Get your feet wet kind of.
Right. Yeah, I think it's limited to your workload type of. Yeah.
But yeah, once you get serious about machine learning, though, the thing that happens is you end up using a ton of compute resources.
Right.
And so we're saying, listen, you can go out and go buy a zillion GPUs and go to town, but the power cost, the actual cost of the TPU of the GPU, and the rest are actually they're really considerable. So instead, you can just literally the idea is that eventually you'll be able to just point your model and your training set at a cloud TPU, and it'll just get done cheaper and more efficient and faster and the rest. So
Shazam says they're doing this using the Google Compute Cloud to do their recognition.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. So is this a business for Google? What's in it for Google? Obviously, there's a business there.
So I look at it on two axes, right? So Jeff and Rajat's goal with open sourcing TensorFlow is to keep people developing neural networks the way that we've been doing it, right? And also, the way we justify all of this, and it's not cheap to develop a team that size and deploy these kinds of chips and all the rest, is that, people will pay to use the TPUs when they're doing inference and training. So, there's a very clear business case inside our cloud business for this. So, and I think the pricing is actually very aggressive and good.
Yeah.
Chris
DeBono, can I thank you once again for bringing us here?
Yes, you're
a great guy.
I'm glad to have you here. So,
Thank you, Chris.
We miss you right here. And I want to tell your listeners, your viewers, what do you call them?
Both. It's people watching and listening.
Okay. Yeah. The people on the chat line. It's such a treat for us to have Leo and Jeff and Jason here. So, you know, and like, you know, Googlers, they're like, oh, can I come? Like, we have a couple people hanging out. It's really great for us. So thanks for coming, you know.
We're really glad to be here. We'll come anytime. This is a great studio. This is actually, you must do other things in here.
This is where they film all the developer videos, like a ton of the things that were shown on the screens. Yeah, this is, I don't know if Matt did his here. Yeah.
Anyways, can I get a Johnny Ive white room look? Can that be done? Can you do that here? I'd love it. There's a green screen right behind me. All right. Actually, I'm kind of partial to the Charlie Rose look I'm getting right now.
He's really liking that. Leo's really liking that.
We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with more smoke 'em if you got 'em, or whatever it is people do these days. Vape it if you got it. But we'll be back with more. And I really want to thank, as I said, the folks at Google for making this possible. Of course, Jason Howell, who came all the way down, and you're going to spend the whole 3 days here at Google.
I'm here till the end. I'm here till Friday.
And watch All About Android on Tuesday, because on Friday you are doing a very special series of interviews, and we'll be airing that on All About Android. And I don't want to give away anything.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and keep that a little bit of a secret, but absolutely, I'm really looking forward to Friday. That's all I'm going to say.
That's going to be great. So watch All About Android on Tuesday about 5 p.m. But you and Flo will be down. Florence Island will also be here for that. Jeff Jarvis, it's nice to be in the same room with you.
It is.
Always.
I love it when it happens.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You came out for this conference, but you're going back home. We will have you on Twitter on Sunday.
I can't wait. Yes, but back from the usual, my usual den where I will be all pink as opposed to today where I look like human.
And Stacy, thank you for doing double duty today. You did that keynote, that long two-hour keynote, and you're back here for more. But I'm glad you're getting a massage afterwards.
Indeed.
Our show today brought to you by Upside, the smart new way to save money on business travel. You, of course, have heard of Priceline, right? The guy who founded Priceline, Jay Walker, is a legend in the travel industry. After he sold Priceline and got out of the travel business for a while, he decided he wanted to get back in, but he wanted to do something kind of different. He wanted to address business travel. See, there's a real gap in business travel. If you ever worked for a big company, I did for Ziff Davis for years, you know that there was a travel department. You'd call the travel department and they would arrange your travel, and that's that. You don't book your own travel and you don't get to choose. They just do it for you. But if you're a small business or a medium business, I know when we started Twit, it was like, well, I guess I'm doing that. That you don't get the deals because they don't have, you know, you don't have any negotiating power. You're really, it's a lot of work and it's not much fun. Well, this is Upside is the way to do business travel from now on. It just takes a couple of minutes. You can do it right now at upside.com. Actually, use the promo code TWIG and I'll tell you why in a second. The way it works is Upside has already negotiated great deals with not just flights, not just airlines, but also with hotels. Now, this isn't Priceline. You're going to know the name of the hotel. You're going to know the name of the airline. You're going to know the time you're traveling. There's no mystery here at all. They will simplify the choices. They'll give you the top six flights and hotels. You choose what you want. You get all your frequent flyer miles, just as always. But they will give you, your business anyway, amazing savings. And then there's a little reward for you, because every time you book a trip at Upside, you're going to get a gift card. That's worth $100, $200, even $300. And these aren't, you know, this isn't some junky gift card. These are Amazon, Target, 50 top brands, Nordstrom. You get to choose. They even have a page dedicated to your current status with gift cards so you can keep track of it. After you book your travel, your gift card arrives via email just 72 hours later. You'll get even more on the overseas trips, and there's no limit on trips or gift cards. Lisa and I are booking our own travel for our own business. This was cool. We were, Lisa, right? I'm not making this up. We were able to apply the gift card immediately. Instead of getting an Amazon deal, we just applied and saved $300 on our flight and our hotels. $1,300? Wow. Where are we going? It was our trip to New York. Wow, that is fantastic. So I want you to try it, upside.com. If you're booking for your business, you get to save the money right up front. Just apply the gift card to the travel. And if you're booking for the company you work for, they get a great discount and you get some nice gift cards. And I think that's a great win-win for everybody all around. Jay's really figured out a sweet spot for upside.com, the best way to save big money on business travel. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIG. Now, here's why. You're guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. You might even get more. You got to use the offer code TWIG, though, to guarantee at least $100. Minimum purchase required. You got to see the site for complete details. Upside, U-P-S-I-D-E, upside.com, and use the offer code TWIG. That does two things, guarantees you a $100 minimum gift card and lets them know that you heard it right here. And that helps us a little bit with the show. On with the show we go. And I want to thank also John Slanina, who is our studio manager, Colleen Goldstein, who was our offsite production booker and one of the best producers I've ever worked with, one of the best studio engineers I've ever worked with, who worked very hard to set this all up. And of course, Karsten Bondi and Burke McQuinn back at the studio. It's a hard thing to do. Yeah, because we didn't bring, you know, studio cameras and big elaborate satellite trucks and all of that stuff. We don't have that stuff. We brought
this time.
Skype.
Next time, satellite trucks come with us.
You know,
but
I've gone that route, and it is no, no better, and B, a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
You know that Tech TV spent $1 million every time they hit the road to do one of those CESs or Comdexes. $1 million.
The waste of money you witnessed there was amazing.
Well, it was to be seen there, basically.
Yeah. The guy who had the money could afford it.
Yeah.
But we really probably should have paid more attention to it. It was Paul Allen, of course, because eventually he got tired of losing money and said, yeah, I'm done. See you guys. Bye-bye. Let's see. We are going to continue on. We stopped. We got very excited because Stacy got so excited.
I like that.
About the Google Cloud TPUs. Have you now learned everything you wanted to know, Stacy, about those?
I will continue learning. But like for me, the big question, when we think about AI being the future, right? Everything's going to be built on some form of machine learning. Do you have to own the hardware all the way through? And are people going to move to a cloud to get this service? Probably. And then how are the big companies going to differentiate themselves? So Google has their TPU-based stuff for the clouds that also works with like GPUs from NVIDIA. But Amazon also has like a machine learning platform as part of Amazon Web Services. So I'm just kind of thinking about how that's going to evolve, I guess. Yeah, my brain's always looking ahead for...
Clearly for Google, this is a way, a way to assert themselves in this very competitive cloud computing field. I mean, Amazon's the king. Microsoft would love to be huge here. Google, I think, has some great offerings, and this is a unique offering as far as I can tell. Though, didn't Amazon announce some stuff fairly recently, Stacey, as well? Feels like they're doing some machine learning stuff.
They are. They don't have their own framework. Like, they don't have the equivalent of a TensorFlow or a TPU. Right. They are reselling, let's see, machine learning. I think they're reselling NVIDIA-based GPUs.
This is where Google is like the king. They're well ahead of everybody else, in my opinion, in machine learning. And so,
yeah, if the war is over machine learning, Google is ahead not only in that, but also he or she who has the most data sets has the advantage when it comes to machine learning, right? That the more data you have to train the systems, and who has more data about the world's knowledge than Google? Facebook has some that Google doesn't have about our behavior. Amazon has strictly our commerce. Apple doesn't have much of any of that. So even though Google, on some matters, we've seen kind of catches up on the front end hardware, on the back end, they're way ahead. Stacey, sorry.
No, well, there's a question here, and this is really subtle and kind of geeky, so we may not want to get too much into it, but when you train, you can train generically for images, for example, like here, do you recognize this? But when you start using machine learning to do things like predict if I show you these, if you've bought this, are you going to buy that? Then you actually need to optimize your machine learning right now very specifically. So it's not as general as language processing or computer vision, which are kind of the two big leaps. So we're going to have these massive, and we are experiencing these massive leaps ahead in computers that can see and computers that can understand us. But when we start trying to make that a little more granular for circumstances, which inevitably we will want to do, there's a real open question if we can do kind of general machine learning, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. A lot of what we saw on stage today, and of course, this is a very this is not deep learning for us. This is shallow learning. What we saw on stage today was in very specific domains, things like reading a biopsy slide and not improving necessarily on a pathologist, but being a backstop, an additional point of information for pathologists. They showed this 17-year-old, this high school student who developed better ways to read mammograms, which I thought was for a high school kid. He says he taught himself how to do this stuff by watching YouTube videos. I mean, which is it's kind of a side testament to YouTube. I love the idea they're making this available. You can find out more. Google has set up a informational website at google.ai. They also have announced that they're going to make 1,000 of these TPUs, these 180 teraflop TPUs, available in the cloud at no cost to machine language researchers via something they call the TensorFlow Research Cloud. You can find out more at TensorFlow.
It's kind of cool. There's the philanthropy of processing power.
Yeah, and I think Google has to do that because there is also the optics of building Skynet.
Right. They have to balance the idea of all of this AI slurp, you know, their AI computers in the background slurping up all of your personal data and using it, yes, for things that are convenient for you, but for, you know, in ways that allow them more access to you. On the other hand, it can be applied to real world, real problems that need solving, that need need smart brains to tackle it.
And that will contribute to the issues. There were three cases, we'll get to a couple of them later, three cases where I saw Google using corporate responsibility as part of the announcements, right?
Yeah.
One was this. One was what you mentioned earlier, Leo, in terms of the inexpensive phones to make the phones to get more connectivity worldwide. And the third we'll talk about later, I assume, is facial recognition and how they pitched that. So there's a way to try to think about these things responsibly as they go.
Yeah, facial recognition, as we know, is very high at the creepy scale.
Right.
And potentially, I think it's great. In fact, I wish Google had released it for, but I understand why they didn't allow me to just arbitrarily put
it
on anybody.
They wanted to not be the first ones to do that.
All these companies have a big PR issue. I think they're genuine in their desire to push the world forward.
Yes.
And better than anyone, they understand the potential of the technologies that they are offering and that they are improving on and that they are helping others work on. But they realize that the general public is becoming increasingly antsy about privacy and security. And in order to get people to use things like the Google Home and the Google Assistant, which we're about to talk about in just a second, They've really got to do, I think, some work to make sure people are comfortable with this, are comfortable with the rules. And I don't know. Do you feel they're doing a good job of that?
I think they're trying. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Stacey.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think about this a lot. And I think this is where actually, don't hate me, y'all, but we actually need a civil debate over this. We need government to actually, we need an agency or lawmakers to actually start this conversation. And I mean a real deep conversation, not, you know, regulate the internet type of conversation, but really understanding what's at stake.
Capable of doing that, Stacey? You think?
Oh, no. And that's what's frustrating.
This is just one of many fields, bioethics. Yes. We're ready to introduce the CRISPR gene to the world and true genomic splicing. And that's a huge conversation we need to have about what's okay, what's not okay, what we want to allow, what we want to have to happen. Do we want people to be able to select the sex of their children? They're going to be able to do that easily and simply. Do we want, I've just forgive me, just finished Daniel Suarez's book about CRISPR, about genetic modification. It's called Fate? Say again? Change Agent. And you know, it starts off, you can go to the store and buy a stamina for your kid, buy 30 extra IQ points for your kid, whatever you can afford. What are the, these are, there's so many things coming down the pike, autonomous vehicles. Who's responsible when a car is driving? Do we want to let cars drive? That we are just ill-equipped. And I have to say, let's be practical. I agree with you, Stacey. The sane, sensible thing to do would be to have a Chautauqua and let's all talk about it. That's never going to happen. Never.
Well, who was it? So Brad Smith just released a statement saying that we need a Geneva conference.
From Microsoft, yeah.
From Microsoft. On these issues. And it was partly, it was also about, it was after Microsoft.
It's about cybersecurity because the NSA,
stuffed, yeah.
Cracked Windows and then it leaked out because they weren't good stewards of the cracks. And then everybody got WannaCry over the weekend. Not everybody, but 200,000 people did.
So what you're saying, Stacey, is that you want this conversation. We should have this conversation, but we're probably not equipped to have the conversation right now.
Well, we're going to have it. And I think that one of the things, and you should tell your students too, that journalists are going to have to do is we're going to have to bring these issues to the forefront in a way that people can understand.
The other place that does this, and you can make fun of me for this, but the World Economic Forum, Davos.
Fine. Right.
Does indeed convene these people around these issues. And they've opened up a Silicon Valley outpost in the Presidio where they're trying to bring these folks together. And I think there's an opportunity to convene, as you say, Stacey, it's a civil conversation, as in all of society and the various constituents. Right. So you need business there, you need technology there, you need academics there, you do need government there, find the good people, and you need educators there. And this is our rulemaking for society. Yeah. Nonetheless, we shouldn't stop the progress.
Stacey, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I was thinking about the future tense, which is New America Foundation, Arizona State, and Slate do a good job from a journalistic perspective talking about these conversations. And this is far beyond Google I.O., but these are things that if we don't talk about them now, if we don't find a way to develop a moral and a cultural consensus, which is admittedly going to be hard. We're just going to, basically what we're doing now is shrugging our shoulders and saying, capitalism will take care of it, which just means that people who have money will be further and further advanced beyond, and the divide just continues to grow. That is
right.
It.
Yep. Meanwhile, let's talk about some other great things you can buy.
Hey, Google Home.
Like Google Home, octopus dumplings. Let's talk. Man, I really got a yen for octopus dumplings during that.
They look really good.
All I could think when he was doing this, I was like, yeah, you don't want to just go up and eat Japanese street food without having an idea of what it is.
Oh, right. Scott Huffman came up on stage. He's a lot of fun and really great presenter and demonstrated some of the new features of the Google Lens in Assistant, including taking a picture of a Japanese a menu board on the street and finding out what it is. And not only did it define what it was, but it showed him, information about it, like what, pictures. He said, can I see some pictures of those and where you can buy them and fascinating things. He then showed, using Google Assistant, apparently you could turn on Word Lens in Google Assistant or will soon be able to at some point in the next few weeks. And he showed a theater marquee that had a Stone Foxes concert coming up May 17th, 9 p.m. It not only interpreted it, that it said, do you want to hear some Stone Foxes? Do you want to know more about the Stone Foxes? Do you want to buy tickets to this show? Would you like to add this to your calendar? It added it to his calendar perfectly, although it did say it was only going to be a one-hour concert, and I thought that was a little short for Stone Foxes. I'm noticing the mistakes, right? Anyway, I can't wait. I think that'll be great.
Yeah.
These features are really cool. Sometimes you run the risk in Google events of seeing these features and going, wow, that's really amazing. That's going to change how I use my device. And then flash forward 6 months later, you've lived with the device, you've used it a handful of times, and nothing. However, at the same time, really cool technology. And you know it's important to Google because it kept coming up
They mentioned it at the beginning. Yes. It found its way into all of these other topics. This is a really good representation of kind of their ability of leveraging, you know, their theme of AI and turning it into something that consumers might pull consumers in and allow them to kind of warm up to the idea of letting Google in more and more and giving them more access.
Really true, Jason. And if you compare it to Facebook's presentation, where they're going after the same tools of AI and AR, but Google has so many more practical ways for you to use it. Hey, we can have sharks swimming around your cereal bowl. Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Who cares?
Right?
Yeah.
Versus here, I can make a concert, buy tickets to a concert that I happen to walk by, and I can converse with the machine with my images of what I see. That's really powerful.
Lots of new languages, like a lot of new languages. Mm-hmm. Everybody will be pleased to see you'll be able then. Valerie demonstrated buying something from Panera, which was kind of amazing because essentially she said to Google Assistant, I want delivery from Panera. And then a male voice took over saying, this is Panera, although it was clearly a machine voice, right? It wasn't an actual clerk. They had a conversation. She ordered and paid. There's voice pay now. She was able to pay entirely without leaving a Google Assistant. And I presume you could do that on Google Home as well. So Assistant has a lot of nice new features. I thought one of the most interesting features, we're going to have to move it along a little bit, so I'm going to kind of skip through some of the little details. But I think one of the nice new features in the Google Home, and it's not here yet because I kept trying to call my mom, is hands-free calling. And I looked back at Jeff and I said, we've come a long way.
Old farts looked at each other, yeah.
They announced you could say, call mom. They said, hands-free calling for free to any phone. We're not talking to another Google Home. We're not talking to a computer, to any phone in the U.S. for free.
Remember when we used to have to, are you on the phone still at long distances? Cost us a fortune. Can you get off the phone?
Exactly. Or my mom saying, get off the line. I want to talk. Or me being on a modem and my kid picking up the phone and disconnecting me in the middle of my Dungeons and Dragons game.
And you can sync it to your own number, too. So technically, I could take my number and make it so that if I make a call through my Google Home, the number that they see on the other end is my actual number and not some random number synced through the home.
That's important.
I wonder at what point you're able to receive calls through your Google Home as well. At some point, have your phone connected so that someone calls your phone.
Well,
you don't
they
have
did
your phone
turn
in your pocket.
On. It turns out these had Bluetooth all along. We didn't know it. They said that'll be turned on, so you could pair it to your phone. So I guess you could.
Yeah.
Stacey, did you get excited about that?
I did. I got excited about two things related to that. One was this. This is just thinking ahead because if you can have people call your Google Home one day, then that becomes and the Echo. Suddenly becomes your home phone again, which means you need a number for it that's not your mobile phone. So I started thinking about that just because I've already had to get my Google Home its own email address. So now it might need its own phone number.
Can you? Pretty soon it'll need its own room in the house. Can you call from the Amazon Echo? Can you call a phone? Or I think you can only
call
another Echo.
I can only
call
people who have the Amazon Echo app.
That's what I thought. Right. So this is really
the Alexa app.
It's kind of fun because Google just stepped up quite a bit. Yes. We call it the Echo app here because we don't want anybody to get upset.
Yes. Sorry, everybody.
Incidentally, the phones in the audience were going off right and left because they said, okay, gee-goo, all the time. And everything was waking up in my pocket. I think this was like – their way of thumbing their nose at Amazon. Oh, Echo can make phone calls to other Echoes. You can call any phone in the U.S. or Canada for free.
Sorry. They also made good on the video that they launched 6 months ago with this, which had notifications by saying, hey, here's some more stuff about the notifications we're going to have. Is that what they called it?
I thought about that. And I think that they really couldn't do it until you could have separate accounts. They recently added the ability to have more than one account, up to six accounts on any given Google Home device. So I think that was, if you think about it, If only one person's getting notifications, that's ridiculous. So
that was and differentiating voices too was critical. To that.
Yes, it could tell who was talking to it. It could see who. I wonder if it could tell who's in the room.
Well, it was also they said that they, through AI when they originally designed Google Home, it had eight microphones, but they only needed three because of the AI processing that was the learning system processing was allowed them to see where the voices were. It seemed. Right.
That wasn't the only shot across Amazon's bow, though. Remember, Amazon released and I immediately ordered the what do they call it? The Echo Show?
Look, is that Show?
Home.
Which one?
The show, one with the screen.
Show is the one with the screen. Look is the one with the camera.
What's the one you want in your closet?
That's the look.
The look.
You got the look. I'd like to know better. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there. I just channeled 1974.
You blacked out.
I blacked out.
The fever has come back.
No, the Google Home has a screen on it. So, I mean, the Amazon Home has a screen on it. So Google says, well, we could do that. Or don't you have screens all over the house? So what we're going to do instead, and I thought this was wild, you can send your calendar to your TV if it's Chromecast enabled. And now
the other key is the installed base of Chromecast has to be much, much larger than Amazon Fire.
Well,
right?
almost all the – we just bought a new Vizio TV cast enabled. You're seeing that
they have it built in. Mm-hmm.
It's built in. It doesn't have to have it built in if you have a Chromecast plugged in. I'm sure that works as well. But you could send photos. You can send YouTube videos. That's not new. There was something else I thought was really cool.
Are we talking about –
telling the home to send something to your screen.
Yes.
It would also recognize, if you're watching a show across devices, it would know where you left off because it knows it's you. So when you say, show me whatever, as I remember they said, it would pick up where you last left off.
HBO.
Well, and it also does show you any YouTube stuff, and they added partners.
HBO, Hulu, YouTube TV, Google Play, CBS, Food Network, the CW, HGTV, Red Bull, Travel, Crackle, DIY, Viki. I'm so glad they finally have the Viki channel and the cooking channel. So that's, I mean, look, it's not my, if you subscribe to YouTube TV.
What's the recipe on the Food Network right now? That's what Vicky asked. That was, I don't know if that's what got you excited, but I was like,
one gets Stacey excited.
That's great.
I'll tell you what got me excited.
Context.
If you have YouTube TV and your DVR, you could watch anything that you've DVR'd. You could just say, hey, show me last night's late show. And it would just pop up on your TV. These are all in the videos that we saw last time. But I think they're starting to really. It shows the weather. I guess
what Stacey said before too. It's the context and intent that comes from understanding the antecedent.
Right.
When you say buy me tickets for that. That knows what the context of the conversation is, and that they showed that leap a year ago. Now they're showing the application of it a dozen ways.
I'll tell you what, I ordered another Google Home. Actually, I ordered two at the keynote because I thought I'm gonna use this more. And I have a lot of Chromecast enabled TVs, and I think this is just really going to be very useful. I also am excited about the new Photos features. They added two interesting features that I think people will like. I think this is the kind of thing Google does that normal people will go, oh, I can use that. And I think they've surfaced it in a good way. There's suggested sharing and shared libraries.
I was a little worried about sharing at first because it reminded me of when we first heard about the shared events that you could go to an event, open up a shared event, and everybody would share their photos from like at a wedding or whatever. And I was like, okay, if you're doing this sort of sharing, which essentially with suggested sharing allows you to kind of share photos from your camera roll that's stored in the cloud or a full album or whatever with somebody else, the receiving end, they have to be using something that they already have, hopefully. And thankfully, they've tied it into the Google Photos app. So as long as you and the person you're sharing it with have the Photos app installed on the device, then you pretty much just pick the people. And I thought this was really cool. Matching, because there's already the face matching aspect of Google Photos. You can do that. You've been able to do that for a couple of years. Now it will detect who's in your photos from that event and offer those up as options to share to directly.
And this is what I think is so critical. We mentioned this earlier in the show, but I think this is so critical that Google's been talking about facial recognition for years, and it's near the creepy line, so they stayed back from it. Facebook announced it, they were going to do it, and didn't kind of acknowledge the creepy line. But what happened today was they said, well, you're going to love facial recognition because these are people you already know, who are already in your photos, whom you want to share with, and it's with your permission, and it makes facial recognition cuddly and okay.
Exactly.
It's around people you do know, around your family and friends. It's for utility. It's the other story that I always tell, that Germans...
Oh, and it's easy to use. And it just kind of shows up. If you're using Google Photos, it's right there.
Right. And it leads to a function. So the story I've told many times is that Germany went nuts over everything about privacy in Google except for priority inbox. Google's reading my email. Yes, thank you very much. And it helps me create an appeal. So as long as the utility is there...
They're an orderly people, the Germans.
They are. They're also grateful for good features and good services. There are a lot of German reporters here, man. They love covering Google. So facial recognition now becomes okay, right? The creepy line has been fudged. I think it was very important today.
I think we're going to use it. I wonder, Stacey, did you run to Andrew and say, hey, honey, look at this automatic sharing of my photos of the kids with you, and you share your photos of the kids with me. Suddenly we'll have like a joint album automatically.
So no, I didn't, because I'm a little creeped out by Google Photos. I'll just be honest. I'm sorry. And I actually share, I have a automatic upload folder in Dropbox set up on my phone, and I share that with my friends who love seeing all my
cats. Effort.
It required one-time effort for me. But here's what I was looking for, and I want to know the answer to. So ask around. How do you turn it off in the case of divorce or a breakup or something? And then what happens to the photos that you share? Do they pull them off the device? Do they keep them?
No, I think we've talked about that before. The precedent is there, Stacey. When they talked about photos originally, if you shared a photo with someone and they already have it, it's like sharing anything. They have it.
Right.
You can't pull it back. And the precedent there is, if you gave a print of a photo to somebody else, where are you going to go? What, you know, unless you're O.J. Simpson, are you going to break into their house and steal it back?
Right. That's my assumption. But then it also needs to be easy to unshare with people.
Well, yes, it does. And also when you start. So he didn't. There was the unintended joke on stage when he said, "I'm sharing these photos."
Oh, so here was the issue, because he started sharing with his wife. But you also, and this, there was no accident here, yes, can set the date the sharing starts. And he says, I'm going to start sharing with her from the time I met her. Because obviously he's not going to share earlier photos for, you know, who knows who's in those photos, right?
Someone else in your life.
Honey, who's
me?
That strange woman in your picture? But I don't think it's for that purpose. I think it's really going to be mostly used by couples with children who, and you know, he made an excellent point. I am not in any of my kids' pictures ever, any of them, because I took them. And so now, you know, your spouse can share the pictures that she took of you and the kids. You can share your pictures that you took of her and the kids, and you'll get a unified album that'll have every. That's just one application. Hand me the book, too, though, because I want to.
Stacey, you can also say who's. You only share pictures of your husband
and
your kids
like that.
With each other. That's it.
That's really cool, especially.
So my wife does not want to see my whiteboard pictures.
Yes, my husband's going to hate my gadget picture. Actually, my daughter, she goes through and she's like, who's that man in the photo? I'm like, oh, that's the FCC commissioner. Just ignore that one.
Why is there a picture, Mom, of Ajit Pai in your photo stream?
former FCC commissioner.
Oh, I know. We all loved him. I was a little gratified when the Google Photos guy showed his photo stream, because his stream looked much like mine, full of kind of some nice pictures and then pictures of receipts and then pictures of whiteboards and of menus and, you know, just kind of the random cruft we use our camera phones for. And I thought, well, at least they're acknowledging that that's what's in there. Yeah. And they're giving you ways to not share, obviously, your receipts and things like this. They're the last to the party with photo books. Apple's done it. Adobe does it. But I have to say, we actually have some physical examples of these photo books, and they're well printed. They're well high quality. This is the paperback version. It's perfect bound. They have some in the paperback version, some full bleed. And then they did one thing which I really liked. It must have been with a pano. It went across two pages, and I'm going to try to find it here. Can you find it while I show the other one? This is the hardcover. This is $20 or starts at $20, which is a very good price for something like this. But more importantly, because photo books, everybody's got photo books. More importantly, the automation involved in making these photo books is really neat. You know, it basically the idea is anyway that Google Photos chooses the best photos. You just deselect the ones you don't want.
You can put text on the cover. It doesn't seem to be text on the pages on captions, so it's a pure photo book.
Well, and that's because I think that's an acknowledgement that it's a pain in the butt to caption every page.
It takes a lot of time. It's work. It's all done it. Post-work, and especially once. Around photo, especially our huge photo libraries. That's one reason why Google Photos as a product, it has consistently been one of my favorite Google products, that and Maps, because they're constantly rolling out new features that actually make it enjoyable to do something that was so painful before. Yes. Managing those large libraries, building a photo book. Like, what I really like about that is they showed the idea, like you're talking about, in your photo roll, you have receipts and all this other kind of cruft, you know, scattered throughout. They kind of showed the example of just highlight a bunch of the photos. Doesn't matter if that other stuff gets in there. Our AI, you know, our machines on the back end are going to analyze those pictures, and we're going to understand that you don't actually want to print that receipt on page 22.
Right.
You know, we're going to pick the very best things, put it up there, and it just lowers that bar so people can act on impulse. Because how many times have I looked at the thousands upon thousands of photos in my photo roll and thought to myself, wow, I've done absolutely nothing with any of these moving on with my life. You know, it's just too difficult for me to like think about jumping through those hoops to do something like that. Now that the bar is much lower, I might actually consider that.
My wife did a lot of yeoman's work for years putting photos into albums.
Horrible.
Yeah. And now I could imagine saying that you'd order a whole series of these with it. If you had a young kid, first six months.
Yeah, right. Do your yearly thing. Yeah.
And put them on the shelf. And they're keepsakes.
So I always used Apple's because Apple's is photo books. They use a very high quality service to do it. And I think Apple and Adobe, of course, are probably the best of breed. There's Blurb, which does a very good job. I don't know who's sourcing these. I think they're very high quality. The page stock is good. Yeah. It's coated. It's thick. They're screened. Any printed photo is going to be screened. So you can see dots if you look up close. But I think the quality very looks nice. Good.
To improve the quality of the photo before they send
That's
it off.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised. Would you use these, Stacey?
I'm not sentimental. I don't keep anything. I'm serious.
Look at her office, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing in it.
Now I get it.
Let's see. Can you see my photo board? That's my photo board.
Okay.
Wow.
You'll be sorry.
That's the extent of photos that I have.
You're old like me and you want to look back on those golden years you had with your beautiful daughter, you'll be sorry.
I don't even have a baby book for. I'm not the right person to ask.
Same things to say about that in about 20 years,
This is a woman who had I've Been Working on the Railroad played at her wedding. I'm just saying. So there was a little bit of stagecraft in this particular. There wasn't much stagecraft in this. I have to say it was very, which is fine.
It was disappointed very Jason terribly. What did Jason want to walk across the stage?
Well, I'm always holding out hope for Boston Dynamics Robot, but that never happens.
I was hoping Sergey Brin would break out the blimp and float it over a shoreline amphitheater. Wouldn't that have been awesome?
With the longest pass ever made to Sundar.
Oh, man. Really could have been good. Opportunity missed, Sergey. I'm just saying. But there was a little stagecraft because the photos guy brought out his what is his name? Because I want to give him credit.
Was it Ravi? No. Anil.
Anil. That's it. You're right. Boy, you're good. So Anil said, my kids are in school, but he brought out a cardboard cutout of his kids to do the selfie and demonstrate how that picture in real time would be shared to his wife's album, which it did. It was really cool. And so that she would see that picture of him with cardboard cutouts of his children. There was a second attempt at stagecraft that I personally don't think went quite as well. Susan Wojcicki was on stage. She's in charge of YouTube. And then introduced a YouTuber. I don't know what her name was. She sure was peppy.
McDonald.
Last name Donald. Super chat.
Super chat.
And two guys, the slow-mo guys, apparently YouTube stars, who were out on the, you know, we are at Shoreline Amphitheater, which is an open-air concert venue that has a lawn, you know, and they were out on the lawn surrounded by a bunch of people in blue jumpsuits who had a role, we would find out later, to demonstrate a feature that isn't that new. Actually, it's been around for a few months.
It's a little creepy, actually.
It's actually a follow-on on what Twitch.tv does. Twitch has really done well by letting its presenters make money on their channel through donations from the chatters. And so Super Chat was added to YouTube as a way for chatters to gift $5, $10, $1, $500 to the presenter during live streams. So they use Super Chat to raise money for, I think, a very good cause.
Yes.
A group that's printing with 3D printing prosthetic fingers, which is okay. That's great. So Barbara asked everybody to participate. They turned off the chat about halfway through. I don't know if at some point
the chat stopped moving.
Yeah, I think I assume there's a reason why. But they had to turn it back on because she was going to give them a super chat of $500, and that meant that 500 water balloons would be thrown at the guy. They cut the whole segment out.
So, yeah, I wasn't thrilled about the segment, but here's the one thing I thought was cute slash cool. Not, okay, cool. Interesting. Let's go with interesting. It's this idea that through Super Chat, they were tying it. Did you notice how they said they can tie it to things like light bulbs and other stuff in the real world? And that's like a little glimpse of I've got to organize my thingy here. It's a little glimpse of where Google can take us once we have all of this stuff connected on the back end. And that is really compelling. In the same way, like last year, I was super excited about instant articles, and then we saw nothing from it ever. Not instant articles. I'm sorry.
Progressive web apps.
What was it? What
Google product were you excited about that didn't emerge?
Instant app. I think was what it was called.
Android Instant Apps.
Yeah, we didn't really
know anything about
those. There were a lot of hits from last year that never emerged, right?
But you saw it this year. Android Instant Apps, which was, you know, this promise that you could not have to download a full app. You could just go someplace and grab something. Right. You saw it in that Panero demo. I don't know if it was the same back-end architecture, but that was the promise. The promise is you could do things without going to other places. And what we're seeing is they're building this infrastructure, thanks to AI, thanks to the contextual awareness they're showing off, that you're going to be able to tie now. And Super Chat was cool because you tied the real world to what was happening online in the virtual world. That's awesome.
Yeah, actually, Jerry Ellsworth, who created Cast AR and is a good friend of the network, I love Jerry. She's a pinball wizard. She would do live streaming from her laboratory while she was soldering and doing stuff. And she'd set it up so that people in the chat room could make things happen in her physical space. Like, you know, the thing you want, Stacey, the punching bag that comes out and hits for the boxing glove that comes out. So that is something they said they didn't give any details about how that works, what kind of programming we would need or anything. So, but yeah, that's what you're talking about though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And imagine, I bet at least three people in the chat right now would pay like $1 to punch you.
I think we found a new revenue model, Lisa. Maybe we could just, you know, raise money that way. I know at least two people who want. They're doing it for you, Stacey. How much would you pay? Well, let me ask the chat room. How much would you pay? I did order Toots the Unicorn. You're right. The geek's reminding me. I ordered a little unicorn that when money was paid somewhere or somehow, we hadn't figured it out, or you tweeted me or whatever, it would fart a rainbow. Is that close?
That's right. I remember that. That was impressive.
Still hasn't arrived yet. All right. Super chat.
Instant apps, by the way, this wasn't on the stage, but someone in chat just posted this in. Who was it? ScooterX. Android Instant Apps now available to all developers. They did a kind of a trial run in January, and now they're rolling it out. So developers have some work to do to make their apps more modular, but they can get in on that.
Let's wrap this up with Android, because now we really have come to that portion of the show where they talked about Android, 2 billion activations. They announced the preview is finally available today, and both these guys on my left and right immediately signed up to get Android O on their Pixels, and you're using it now, right?
Did you get it yet?
I did. I finally got it. Yeah.
So this is
there, I got it. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. I got it. It's going to take me some time to run into the little pieces throughout.
That what were some of the things?
Oh, that's
though.
What's that?
What were some of the things?
It's supposedly, and I'd like you to try this right now, boots twice as fast as Android N. In fact, they divided it into two different particular areas, one of which is really more of a branding area where they're going to kind of surface security. This is called Vitals. They're going to surface security that's already there. Things like the fact that people don't know it, that that the Play Store is scanning your apps regularly to look for malware.
Ooh,
so that
I long press on a an app. So if I have a notification from Twitter, I don't have to pull down the notification and do all the Magilla. I can long press on the Twitter icon, and it will show me all the notifications there that are
specific to that. Notification dots was another part of that, right? Like I can see on my Pinterest app, apparently I have an update on Pinterest. Like I don't know if it comes through on the screen at all, but probably not. But there's a little dot above Pinterest that tells me I have a notification there.
There is?
Tap and hold, and I get the notification as a pop-up window.
I'd also like you to try out a new feature. They're using some of this AI in messages, in text, whether it's email or whatever. Machine learning, they say, will pick out business names. So when you normally when you tap on a word, it will select just the word. Now it'll say, oh, that's part of a business name. It'll select the whole business name. And then you can use this tap feature.
So let me look up my hotel last night.
It's curious. You could, for instance, say, I want to navigate there. It'll also recognize addresses and phone numbers. Tapping on them will highlight them. And then if you long press it in the pop-up, for instance, because it says, oh, that's a business or an address, it'll show you maps as one. Instead of cut and paste, it'll show you maps as one of the options. So
Smart Text Selection.
Smart Text Select.
No, the problem is it's already just trying to open. Okay, hold on. Wait.
They call it a neural network specifically for your phone because – all of this is done apparently on phone. This isn't on server.
Which was a part of their announcement also around TensorFlow, TensorFlow Lite for on-device kind of neural network processing. So we're going to see more and more of that happening on the device instead of relying on the cloud.
They even said that they expect machine learning specific processors in the phone.
Right.
Which I think is a variant, would be very interesting.
Can't find it. No, I'm trying to look in my email for something that has a business name or has a – maybe try it in text.
It's something for you to play with. You can just play with. You can shrink video if you're watching – if you're in a video chat and access other applications.
You do that with YouTube as well?
Yeah, picture in picture.
Yeah. Anything else? What else? Security
The whole thing? There's one other thing I think is important.
Oh, yeah.
So at the end, Sundar came back on.
Oh, no. Let's finish Android.
Okay, that's what I thought. So I said the whole thing?
Not the whole thing. Just the whole Android. They say better battery life because they're finally doing something Apple did from day one, which is they're going to limit how long you can sit in the background.
And that's a really important component, I feel like. I've been very actually envious of that aspect of iOS and how iOS operates. Obviously, they're two completely different ethos as far as how Android is very open and giving to developers access to the underlying architecture versus iOS, which locks it down. But then you get, kind of better background management on iOS as a result. The apps can't go rogue, let's say, and kind of terrorize your device performance in the background. So apparently Android O is going to make some big steps to kind of rein in the stuff that's happening in the background.
They
say
that. Remember Doze? They say that every
incrementally it does get better and better.
Yeah. And it is better, I have to say. Doze worked. If you want Android O, you can get it at android.com/beta, but you'll have to have a Pixel, I think. maybe a Nexus.
Some of the Nexus devices, the Pixel C, you can do it on. So the Nexus 5X, 6P, Pixel, Pixel phones, listed Pixel various C.
Basically, it has to be Google device.
Yeah, right.
At least for now. This is the first time they've done a public the public beta, I guess. Google is adding Kotlin as a equal peer to Java as a programming language for Android. Must be a good thing. The developers cheered. Kotlin is a language, a fairly young language that was created by JetBrains, the folks that do the IDE that Google bought and later made the very nice IDE, I think, for Android development. They've been working on that for a while. It's a strongly typed, statically typed language, kind of like Scala, they say. And I think developers were mostly cheering because they just hate Java and are excited. Ooh, look, you got the mini window on there. Show the folks at home.
Show the folks. So I got the picture.
So
in
that
picture.
Is, oh, picture in picture.
Yeah, down there. And I think I can move it around. Yeah, I can move it around the screen. I can't tell my directions. Right? So picture in picture. So I can be doing other things while the video is open and let it roll. Which Facebook's talked about as well, which is a problem. You don't want this to turn into a TV. You want to be able to do multiple things, and two big screens. I don't think is sufficient. So this way, it's a see it there, see what's going on. And that's the first time that the notion of video on Twitter makes any sense to me.
Yeah,
as if you can break it.
So you don't want to turn it into a TV, but you don't mind turning it into a PC.
Ooh. Next, they talked about VR, AR, and Tango. Tango's getting smaller and smaller. We already mentioned the dedicated VR headset. I think that's potentially very interesting. We'll learn more about that tomorrow.
They also mentioned with Tango that I've been waiting for this. I'm surprised we haven't seen more application of this. That godsend this could be for the seeing impaired. To be able to navigate an environment and have you give audio or other cues about how to go around would be key to me. And I think we haven't seen enough of that yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then Sundar came back. And
we missed one. We missed a pretty big one, actually. Was Android Go.
We talked about that earlier briefly. Yeah.
What is Android Go?
Go
the inexpensive version.
Yeah, we mentioned it briefly, but just to kind of dive into it a little bit more, it's not a separate version of Android. It's basically a minimized, let's say, version of Android that's tailored to devices that have a gig of RAM or less. So when you're talking about, well, I guess we did kind of dive into this somewhat earlier, didn't we? The kind of emerging markets. The emerging markets.
But there's a lot of things they're going to do. They're going to limit the apps that you can use. The apps will in themselves, developers will be able to...
Creating their own versions of the apps.
Yeah.
YouTube Go.
I think that's a great thing. And this is the thing we did mention. With 2 billion active users now, this is the next billion.
Yeah, the next billion.
Active users.
Yeah, that's right. My apologies. I forgot about that.
I should remind people, this is no longer a everything under the sun keynote because Google is now just a part of Alphabet. This isn't an Alphabet keynote. So for people who are interested in, you know, flying cars, blimps, contact lenses that can read your future, that would be for a keynote that doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. Maybe it should.
I kind of miss the days of Sergey parachuting in.
What struck me, I didn't write this. I was trying to write this tweet and I can't remember how to say it. But back in the wonderful days of Bell Labs, you know, when we were kids and we get the movie projector was wheeled into the classroom and you see this guy with the stentorian voice telling you about the wonders of the universe, that Bell Labs was the closest thing we had besides universities to a pure science operation. Now Google is the closest thing we have to that, I think. And there's things that are happening in this company that I think are important to get excitement about science, excitement about technology, excitement about what can happen. Now, you know, then you get, Larry building his own island where he'll move to, which will be happening in Toronto very soon. But I do wish there were this opportunity for Google to gee whiz this a little more. Maybe they don't want to right now, because I think this goes to the very final point. Are we there now? That Sundar came on about jobs.
Sure.
I think that was a critically important moment because basically it was the other point. We mentioned earlier about how Google was being sensitive around these other issues of corporate responsibility. Well, the final one was jobs, where I think what's going to happen is that the unemployed in America are going to wake up one day and realize that it's not strangers from across borders who are causing their change in their job situation. It's technology. And as Eric Schmidt has always said, when it comes to wanting to fight technology, who do people go after? The largest guy in the field, and that's Google. So I think what we saw was a preemptive strike by Google saying that we're going to, they're going to come up with functionality to help you find the right jobs down to a far more granular level. So that you can even check on jobs that are within N minutes of commuting time for you and things like that. And that's Google trying to help people with jobs. Now, does it go far enough? No. What we have to do is have more education as a society. We have to do a great deal more. But I think it is an acknowledgement that technology in general and Google in particular will have an impact on jobs. It also struck me, and people have already yelled at me in my Twitter feed about this, that's what newspapers should have done years ago. And people said, well, newspapers did. They had classifieds. Yeah, and they made a fortune out of them. They charged for them. And they really didn't see that as a service. Google now sees this idea of getting people jobs as a service that they need to help accomplish for people as part of their corporate responsibility. So I think it was a big deal at the end.
Good point.
And the fact that it came from Sundar said this is a corporate responsibility.
Good point.
Well, let's wrap this up. Stacey, what was the high point? Was there anything we've left out, something you thought was really cool?
No. We've talked
about
it.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll get to our picks in a second. How about you, Jeff? Anything?
No, I think we pretty much.
I think we left out one thing, which was a big ooh-ah moment. Scooter X pointed that out in our chat room. Unfortunately, I don't know if this will work, but Google Photos is going to add automatic obstruction removal to the Pixel camera. And one of the things they showed was a picture all of us as parents have taken of our kid in T-ball batting shot through a chain link fence. And there's a chain link fence in the way of the shot. And magically, he pushed a button and the chain link fence just disappeared. And the kid was...
This is where journalists freak out.
Right. This is you worry about fake news?
Yeah.
This AI has the potential to create fake news that is unfreaking believable. Well, or believable, actually. Mm-hmm. So
that's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
This particular photo, like object removal from Google Photos is interesting. It reminded me immediately of, I found a video here. Maybe I can get it to Karsten. It was a SIGGRAPH 2015 paper where they showed how you do obstruction-free photography. And I think what it is... It's less about taking a single picture. It's more about taking potentially a series or a movement. And because of that, it can match the patterns that exist behind the object and track the object in front and then fill in the pieces and give you a single image based on those images. So, but that's super cool. It's a really cool kind of feature to roll in there.
There it is. Karsten's showing it right now. I don't, we'll have to wait and see how well that works. That's a lot to promise.
That got an ooh from the audience. Like
it certainly did. Well, we know how hard that is to do, particularly because the things that are behind the chain link fence don't exist for the camera. And so you have to replace pieces of the picture by extrapolating what's there.
I wonder, does it not just extrapolate the pixels, but does it know that's a person and this is where a person's body goes?
I think it's more like that. What you were talking about, Jason, which is it's going to gather information over a longer period of time and the micro movements in the background and then the kid will help it fill in the blanks, but it's not an easy thing to do. And you know what? If they can do it, that just shows you how powerful their AI is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Stacey, you had a pick of the week before we let you go?
It was not a pick of the week exactly. It is something I found. Do you want to go to an ad or I still have time?
No, go right on. Do it. Do it to it. We don't need any more ads. We've had enough ads. It's an all Google show today.
Look what
I have.
A speak and spell.
Where'd you get a speak and spell?
We found it in my husband's attic. But the best part, ready? It still works.
Wow. Now, you can rewire that and build the first prototype compact computer. Oh, no, wait a minute. That already happened in 1982.
I was really excited because this is like my childhood right here. And the fact that it worked was awesome.
Are you going to give it to your daughter and see if she gets smarter?
She's already been playing with it. She just makes it say, are you okay, a bunch.
It's just... She must think it's so primitive.
She's like, this is lame.
Mom, how could you think that was cool? That's so funny. But you know what, Stacy? You're a smart cookie, and we can thank Texas Instruments and Speak and Spell for that. Anything you'd like to leave us with?
I have no number. We went through all the numbers possible. They were all in the billions.
But they were all billions.
I just want to reiterate thanks to the Google staff for making this possible. And it's
really great.
I just want to say this. So there have been three Googlers sitting in the room. And it's interesting to do this show because when I wrote a book called What Would Google Do? And I came to do a talk here. I thought, they're all going to know how full of crap I was. And we could say things here as we always do every week. And we had Googles looking at us. And I was kind of watching your eyeballs thinking, well, if they rolled like Anderson Cooper.
I know, right?
If you pull an Anderson Cooper, I think, I got that wrong. But they're good actors. But I'm grateful. Thank you.
That's nice. How about you? Anything you want to say, Jason?
I will go ahead and give a quick app to check out, if you don't mind. It's totally IO related. I have not checked it out myself yet, but today, right when IO was starting, Google released a new app to the Play Store called Audio Factory, and apparently it's meant for Daydream, and it's a representation of kind of some of Android O's new developments around spatial audio kind of experiments or whatever. So I don't know. It's worth checking out. I'm curious to dive in there and see. It kind of sets up some scenery. I have to imagine there's a little bit of kind of three-dimensional, surround sound sort of thing when you've got the headphones on. I honestly don't know what it's all about, but it looks very intriguing.
And speaking of which, I completely dropped the fact that at the beginning of the event, before Sundar Pichai took stage,
yes,
we had two DJs. I don't know if they're brothers or twins. Yeah, performing on the left and the right using little tap boxes and little percussive devices attached to their Android phone. And I think that was Google's very subtle way of telling musicians it's okay to come into the water. Musicians have, I think I'm right, Jason, you correct me on this, but musicians have eschewed Android because it's famous for, and this is a problem really in the Linux kernel, a 10 millisecond latency in the audio channels that no one has ever been able to get rid of. And it really, any latency really impairs live performance.
Absolutely.
It's one of the reasons there have been a dearth of musical performance apps on Android, while there are many, many on iOS.
Yeah.
And it's not just the 10 milliseconds. It adds and adds and adds and adds. And eventually you can get a significant half second delay or more, which really makes it unusable. Those guys were playing in sync in time
on different Android phones
with no appreciable latency. And I have a feeling that there was a reason why they put that up on the stage. They had mentioned that they thought that they had solved this with Android O. So maybe that's part of what you should try out.
Absolutely. They're going to have the space here to go in and play around with it.
Really?
They did last year. They had kind of a dedicated music production area to kind of play around with it. And they really have touted, at least as one of the features of O, is improvements around professional audio and getting that latency down. So I just don't wonder if it's a little too little too late, because a lot of the musicians have just kind of gone full board on iOS at this point. But I'd rather have it than not. And I'm curious to see what it's all about.
Have you got
you and everybody else?
Huh? Did you sign up for O?
I did not, because I'm going to travel with my Pixel. I use Google Fi, and it's going to be a great traveling phone for me, and I don't want to mess it up right before we hit the road.
Yeah.
Speaking of hitting the road, it's time to say goodbye. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Stacy Higginbotham is at stacyoniot.com, also iotpodcast.com. You'll find her on Twitter at GigaStacy. You really worked hard today, harder than me, so thank you for being here both times. In fact, go get yourself a massage. Yeah,
there we go.
And it's charge it to Uncle Leo.
Like it's my Mother's Day present.
Nice. Have a great time. Thank you very much for coming all this way.
Thank you.
Not for the show, I know, but
it's always the part of the reason to be out here.
Professor of Journalism at the City University of New York, the blogger at BuzzMachine.com, and the author of great books like What Would Google Do? Public Parts, and should I mention Geek Sparing Gifts?
Sure.
You always laugh.
I got through the show without crossing a bridge.
There you go.
I'm happy.
There you go. How nice is that? You're right. Just go down from the airport. It's no problem. You did cross a peninsula. Is that okay? You don't mind peninsulas.
Peninsula's okay.
Just bridges.
Okay. Bridges that fall down.
We'll see a lot more of Jason Howell Of course, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Not today, but most of the time, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC on TNT, and every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on All About Android. And a reminder, once again, something very special on Tuesday. We won't say what, but he's got some big interviews here at Google I/O, and you're going to see the results of those interviews.
I want to say it. I want to. I want to tell you, but I'm not going to.
You're such a tease, Jason Howell. Such a tease. We're going to be at the Maker Faire on Friday. If you're in the Bay Area, the San Mateo Maker Faire, we will be Friday afternoon from 1 to 5. Father Robert Ballester and I will be down there. We're going to bring our cameras, right, Colleen? So if people have some projects they want to show us, bring them on by. No projects too small or silly, and we'd love to see it and meet you and say hello. So come by 1 to 5 Friday afternoon if you're out in San Mateo, California for the – that's the mothership of Maker Faire. I'm Leo Laporte. We thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.